And good evening, everybody. Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that asks you to fly out of the box of conventional thought and reach out into the dimensions of potential possible realities. And to do that, I bring you some of the leading thinkers and writers of our age, all dedicated to alternative thought. And tonight, I have a very special person with me who will be on shortly, Philip Gardner. You probably know of him. He's a best-selling author. He's written a number of books, those that I'm aware of, for example, just off the top of my head, Knossos, another, The Ark, The Shroud, and Mary. And we're going to be talking about his new book, Gateways to the Other World, tonight. Hello?
Hello.
Okay, we've got some clashing sounds on the BBS end. Can you try to repair that line while I finish my introduction? So before we get on to Philip, I just wanted to remind you, first of all, apologize for another telephone line problem when I came to you from Abydos last week. I'm trying to run this show and travel the world bringing you news from the sacred sites, and sometimes that is not as easy as it would sound. So I'm sorry if you were listening in and saw that we got cut off with my guest, and we'll try to bring him back on at a later date. Okay, here we are. Hi, Philip, are you with me?
I am, yes.
Boy, we have a terrible connection. Philip, I think we're going to have to ask the radio station to call you back.
Okay.
You want to go ahead and hang up, and I'll have them call you back?
Okay, you're good.
Oh, much better. Okay, it was worth the wait. So, welcome, Philip. I've just introduced you, took a little break, and here we are again. Thank you for coming on today, and I know that we're going to have a dynamite conversation because we're kind of on the same page as with so much of the material that's covered in your book. So I'd like to start out by just asking you, well, it's hard to ask you what motivated you to write this book because you're such a prolific author and you've got so much great work out there. But I would like you to just kind of introduce us to your book and give me an overview of what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Well, the thing that really got me into writing Gateways was a work that I'd done before called Gnosis, which was investigating the ancient concept of knowledge, but it's a very different kind of knowledge to the type that most people will get from reading a book. It's a knowledge that a lot of people will probably recognize as something that they can't express in words. And it's a mystical, spiritual knowledge that comes from the perceived perception or the perception of a connection to a greater being or to the oneness, to the deity. So it's a gnosis of God, the divine. And so working on that book and the ancient Gnostics and the various other cultures that all had very similar beliefs made me wonder what the science was behind this connection point and if there was any science at all. And that led me into, of course, the shamanic element to all this, which is where it basically originated, as far as we can tell, and right up to today, to modern mystics. And through all of that, you go through all the concepts of the gateways to the other worlds, to the many other worlds that are spoken of, such as, Atlantis, Avalon, Lemuria, Heaven, Hell, you name it, there's so many. And it was just basically trying to understand what that connection point was all about within the human mind and within science. And so we went through various experimentations, speaking to scientists, quantum theorists, and we came up with a book.
Well, I think it's very exciting that we are seeing such a bridging of science and spirit now, and that your book bridges the gap so beautifully and appeals to so many people, to the left, to the right brain, with such eloquence.
It's
very delightful
nice,
to be able to present that to our
listeners.
Since
it came out, I've been contacted by believe it or not, quite a few astrophysicists and quantum theorists who are basically saying things like it's opened their eyes as well. So that's quite strange.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say I'm really excited. I'll be having Michio Kaku on my show, and to think that a person of his scientific caliber would be interested in coming on a show titled Beyond the Matrix is just very exciting and very promising for how it's all blending now.
Well, I think...
But there are so many threads in your book that are absolutely synonymous and synchronistic with my own personal journey. I just couldn't wait to get you on. So I wanted to start out by asking you, because one of the things I've been talking about on some of the shows is using shamanic tools such as ayahuasca and other hallucinogenics for people to induce that state of consciousness where they are able to bridge out of the reality. And I'd like to know, I know you talk about ayahuasca in the book, I'd like to know a little bit about how you feel about this journeying, if you have personally journeyed with ayahuasca, and what is your opinion of working with shamanic tools of this caliber?
Well, to be quite honest, I haven't worked with any drugs whatsoever, other than the ones that are already resident within my own mind, and those of subjects or experimental people that we've had doing things. Of course, there's an awful lot of research out there and people that are using and have used experimental drugs. I don't see the need for them because there are various other techniques that can be used, which we talk about in the book, and that we tested and that man has used for an awful long time. So for the context of this book, I didn't see the point in actually doing any experimentation with that.
Okay, can you tell us about the specific experiments you have been talking about in the book that you say lead to opening the gates and entering the journey to the other world? I'm very interested in having to be able to provide people some of the, just some highlights of those experiments that you mention in the work.
Well, the experiments that we chose were chosen because of the science that we'd come to. For instance, the specific brainwave frequencies that you need to be in order to get to that particular human point that we call this opening up of the gateway. The frequency that I had a hunch over was between alpha and theta, two specific frequencies that the brain works at, which is the point between awake and asleep. This is the point, the lucid dreaming state, the point where you're falling asleep and you can't quite get into that deep sleep, and so you are aware of the things that are going off inside your mind at that moment. And I had a hunch that that frequency would open up an awful lot of other things within science and within the ancient mysteries, and boy did it. So we put our science around that frequency. So the tests that we were doing were about getting the person down from pumping alpha, which is like really awake and really, you know, cooking on gas, right down to the point of nearly sleeping and how to get that. So we did a few things. One of them was entrainment of the brain, which is where you flash lights, play a noise, using goggles and headphones, and monitor your brainwave function in order to get your brainwave frequency down to the specific frequency that we're talking about, which is around 7.83 hertz. So we did that, and we did that with me, and the effect wasn't immediate, but when I did go outside and I did look around at things, I started to see different parts of the spectrum, things that were off the normal spectrum, so the things like trees would have a glow around them, and your palm of your hand had a specific glow. It was almost like seeing auras. So that was really fascinating. It also solved my headache problem at the same time. So that gives you a very natural and very healing frequency. Other experiments were based on things from history, such as crystals and meditation, and also fasting. So we
but
don't
is, want to... That meditation is still pretty subjective?
I would say it's incredibly
subjective. I mean, how can you scientifically measure the progress or the process of meditation in another human being by measuring the brainwave output?
Yes, that's one of the only ways that you can do it. I mean, I don't purport to be a scientist for one minute, and I do say that quite blatantly in the book. I'm not a scientist, but I do like to try to get as close as I possibly can with limited funding, and then talk to other scientists about it. So it was a very simple experiment that I wanted to go through, and it was almost just out of pure curiosity to see if a totally non-metaphysical, straightforward guy could also have these effects without any spirituality in his bones whatsoever. To see if we
and the answer
get him
is
into
yes.
A state. The answer was yes. We did. We got him into a state where he was seeing very peculiar things.
Like?
Well, he was hallucinating at certain points about, probably the wrong word, but seeing characters walking in and out. He was floating on air. He left his own body and saw his, and turned around and saw himself lying there. Those kind of things, which are pretty standard reported elements of, drug-induced state, trance state, all those kinds of things, including, alien abduction and various other things that are predominant today.
And, of course, we're going to have the ongoing debate of whether or not this is due to a chemical imbalance or chemical reactions within the brain, or whether this is transiting some level of consciousness or portals. I mean, we have so many options for what we can describe this as being, but one thing is clear, these phenomena are happening.
Absolutely. You hit it right at the nail right on the head there. There's no point in blinding ourselves to this is just a nonsense drug, whatever. This has happened to mankind, I think, ever since he became conscious. And I think that the two things are linked entirely. But will the answers be found within quantum physics, for instance? And are we really tapping into something that's really natural and that we've actually forgotten? I find it absolutely fascinating subject. And the difficulty is in, exactly as you pointed out, is in discovering which elements of these is true. What is truth? Are we really being abducted by aliens? Are there angels that come down? Were they goblins and ghosts, or are these figments of our imagination, or are these other dimensions? You know, all those things.
Or is this lifetime a figment of our imagination?
Yeah. Maybe this conversation.
The angels and the goblins are the so-called reality, and going to work and dealing with Earth affairs is the hallucination.
Well, sometimes it would make more sense than the reality that we see outside.
It really would. I think it's very interesting to talk about how electromagnetism, and you've described this as brain frequencies and electric currents coming out of the brain when you're talking about doing these kinds of scientific testing. But in the end, we need to talk about what is the effect of electromagnetism for the entire planet. And how does what has this got to do with regard to the sacred sites, the energy gateways, and byways of the planet? I mean, we've got a lot to talk about in 45 minutes.
Well, absolutely. the beauty of electromagnetism is obviously a lot of people have been looking at that and looking at sacred sites and seeing Earth energies correlating at these places and collecting at these places or even being dispersed at certain places. But one thing that we've got to understand today, and I'm sure I know you do because I've been looking at your website, is that quantum physics comes into this as well. The electromagnetism, or any kind of energy form, is not just a wave. It's also a particle. And
yes.
The information within our brain is being passed around inside our brain by neurons and chemicals and energy. But it's the information that is within the particle. The wave is the carrier. That particle, we're talking about quantum physics. We're talking about elements of our existence that we very, very little understand. And our very thoughts are being created all the time, and we are creating particles of thought. And quantum physicists tell us, and a good friend Tom Messerell, who's a magician in America and a top astrophysicist, he wrote a paper on it about quantum entanglement. And that's fascinating how particles can entangle.
I read across that in your book, and I kind of like, okay, this is almost more than I can understand.
Yes,
we have to understand
that our thoughts are these waves and particles. So the information of our thoughts becoming particles, and the information of everything becomes particles in that way. And they can never be destroyed, but they can also connect to other particles or entangle with other particles from not just here, but on the other side of the universe instantaneously. That's instantaneous communication, which is why people are looking at quantum entangled computers. So we won't need to have broadband or the internet. We'll just have a quantum computer which will communicate with every computer but everywhere at all time, instantaneously. Now,
okay, I have to interrupt you and ask you now. You said to the other side of the universe, and you're not going to get away with saying something like that without explaining what you mean.
Well, it's very difficult to understand, but the evidence has shown from the research that the quantum physicists are doing is that particles can entangle with other particles, but there seem to be strict criteria. Firstly, those particles have to share a similarity. They have to, it's like, let's say you're my sister, me and you would share an emotion, so our particles would therefore entangle better. And those are the kinds of experiments that they've been doing, where they put friends in different boxes, which are lead-lined, and they monitor the brainwave frequencies and to see if there is any kind of knowledge being passed between these people. The lead lining stops the wave, but it doesn't stop the particle. So when they flash a light at one person in, say, the right-hand box, does the person in the left box in any way pick up that emotion of the light being flashed? And by monitoring the frequency of the brain, they found that people that were emotionally connected were actually picking up the emotions of the other person in the other box. People who weren't emotionally connected weren't. But over time, if they got together and they became emotionally connected, then they were picking up those particle entanglements. Now, that's fascinating. So if you're on the other side of the universe, it would not matter, because particles can entangle instantly everywhere. It doesn't matter where they are.
Oh, it's such a great time to be alive. We're talking to Philip Gardner. His website is www.gardnersworld.com, and he is the author of an incredible new book called Gateways to the Underworld, The Secrets Beyond the Final Journey from the Egyptian Underworld to the Gates in the Sky. I just want to give you that little plug there, Philip, because usually when people are listening in, they're already going to Amazon.com to see how they can get their hands on the book.
That's very handy.
Okay, I wanted to ask you now, you talk a lot about Egypt, which is my favorite discussion. I'm just back from Abydos, where I did some very powerful experimenting in the Osirian. And I'd like to talk about your feelings about the Great Pyramid. You allude to the fact that it holds a great secret to the quantum realm, and would you like to talk about that?
Yes. Well, I don't think for one minute that our ancestors use the same terminology that we use. I don't think that priests of Osiris were walking around saying, oh, do you know about the quantum realm? But I do think that they were in connection with this natural state, if I can call it that, whether it was through the drugs, the meditation, the prayer, the fasting, whatever it was that they did, and we know, of course, what they did, that they were in connection to it. They were in connection to that quantum world. Now, most Egyptologists will sit there and say, oh, of course, the pyramids are their burial sites. And yet, when you talk to them in private, and I've talked to quite a few in private, they'll admit openly to you that they have no idea if it is a burial site or not, but that's what they're told to say.
Really?
They've not found any pharaohs within these things, a few bones, but no evidence, no strong evidence. And I'm of the opinion, along with very many other people, Alan Alford and various other pseudo-experts, that the Great Pyramid was not built to bury one man, that it was actually the gateway. You know, I mean, it was called Ross Tower. It is the gateway. And it was used as, in my opinion, and, it's just an opinion, that this was used as a kind of flotation tank for the individual within there, the priest, whoever it was, to connect to this divine, this Gnostic state. And I say that because of all the other evidence that's in the book, not least of which that the earth itself resonates the same frequency that our mind does when we enter trance, or it does naturally. That the Great Pyramid is a massive limestone building at what was perceived the center of the earth's landmass. It was therefore a fantastic collector of electromagnetic frequency. And the chamber in the middle, off to one side, according to the tilt of the earth, that's why it's off-centered, is actually of granite, which is 90% quartz crystal, which resonates at 7.83 hertz, the very same frequency that our mind needs to be in order to enter that trance gateway.
Okay, let me interrupt you, because you said something very interesting. You said that the chamber is tilted, it's off, because of the tilt of the earth. I find this is new information for me, and it's very interesting. Could you elaborate that?
Yes, obviously the earth itself is tilted at around about 23 degrees and has been for an awful long time, as most people will know if they're into that kind of thing. So we're not actually upright. The earth is slightly tilted, and that's what causes precession, which gives us the long May and year, etc. But because of that tilt of the Earth's axis, that means that the electromagnetic poles of the Earth are kind of slightly off from the tilt of the Earth. So it would make sense not to place the chamber in the center of this massive structure. They would have to offset it slightly. And it's very incredibly difficult for me to explain geography and the maths of this over the radio, but you can actually work out that the chamber is slightly offset because of that tilt. This is information that was given to me by another author, Crichton Miller, who did some fascinating work with the Great Pyramid. So
Let me get that name again, Crichton Miller. Does he have a book out?
Yes, he's got a fantastic book out called The Golden Thread of Time. And he's a very, very good friend of mine.
This is for you, Crichton. We're going to plug your book, too. The Golden Thread of Time sounds like something I'm going to definitely want to read.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I find this interesting because a lot of people, I'm not an Egyptologist, but I spend a lot of time there, and I spend a lot of time in the pyramid, and a lot of time in the so-called sarcophagus. And, of course, there's a lot of talk about the fact that the sarcophagus has been slightly moved because people were disappearing when it was aligned.
Yes.
And I find this information you're giving us now very interesting, because couldn't it very well be that from the time the pyramid, the chamber was configured to correlate with that tilt in the earth, we've had a slight alteration of the earth's tilt, and it has thrown that out of alignment? That's what you call a run-on question.
I think that would be very marginal, because the earth's tilt does actually alter over time anyway, and I think that the geography of it is pretty rough in that respect. So, but it's a possibility, a definite distinct possibility. I think that personally that they have moved that sarcophagus, in my opinion. But there are a great many people that have been in there and come out with some very strange stories, not least of which is Napoleon, of course.
Of course. Well, he didn't actually come out with a story. He just said, "I will never discuss what happened."
That's right.
He came out white and chalk and said, "I will never discuss what happened in there." But he stayed there all night.
Yes, yes.
Phew!
Have you been in all night?
I haven't been in all night, but I do want to announce that I've just come back from Abydos, where I spent hours alone in the temple in the dark.
Did you connect?
Oh, yeah. Big time. That's the subject for my new book, which will be out soon, called Where Pharaohs Dwell. But managing to be
to
in... Pardon?
We'll look forward to that.
Thank you. Managing to be in a temple like that, alone in the dark, in that creating that altered state, these are the great moments of life, at least for me. I feel so privileged to be able to create the situations required for this to happen. And so, no, I haven't slept overnight in the pyramid, but if Zabi Hawass would let me, I'd do it.
Well, I've heard with him.
Well, do you know him, too, in your group of Egyptologists?
Yes, I know quite a few, so we'll see what we can do.
Something tells me he's the one that's telling the Egyptologists to say, it's a tomb, it's a tomb.
Mm. Yes, unless you can prove otherwise, in which case it'll be a minute anyway, yeah. No, but
all right, so let's get back to then the vibrational frequencies of the planet. And can we talk about ley lines and how the Great Pyramid is positioned, how the ley lines run on the planet, and how all the sacred sites are connected?
Well, of course, we have to get over the fact that a lot of people might be jumping up and down right now saying ley lines have nothing to do with energy. And they'd be right properly in language, they'd be correct, because a ley line was actually originally just a straight line in order for a ship to come into harbour or people to build things. But, and this is my argument with people that say that, there is one particular place that we did some research in England where there are ley markers on the land, which are like standing stones, which were used for ancient man to set a ley to in order to come into port to avoid the waves of the sea that would put them onto bad land, okay? So these things are pointing to waves. Now, the people who just say it's just for navigation, etc., say that those markers are there to give you the lay so that you can come into land, and it's nothing to do with energy. So we got some dowsers up there to these lay markers, and lo and behold, they found energy. And they also took with them certain electromagnetic devices to pick up energy and noticed that there were great changes when they went towards these ley markers anyway. So regardless of whether they say that there are no energies, there are energies, and that proves the point, that even the ley lines that are used physically and you know, visibly, there's also an invisible marker there too. But in the book, we go through an awful lot of markers around the world, which I'm of the opinion, and certainly my good friend Hamish Miller, a great dowser, is of the opinion, that these places were, if not on places of great power, where there is geomagnetic faults or there are underground fissures or whatever, but they are also maybe placed there to create an energy to connect to this wonderful frequency that the Earth has got, and that we need to connect to when we're in trance, when we want to go to this other world, or we want to go and visit other places, if you want to read it that way. So there are a lot of things around the world that do these, not least of which are things like the Great Round Towers, which have always been an enigma to a great many archaeologists, even so much as that they dated so many of them incorrectly because of their false perceptions. These round towers are found all over the world, and nobody's ever known what they were really for. Could it be that these
were hard? What exactly are you referring to when you say round towers?
Well, if you go to places like Ireland, for instance, there are you'll find lots of very tall round towers, which are just falling down now these days. They're just collapsing, and farmers over the years have just taken stones away and built farmhouses. Even the churches arrived and actually built churches into the round towers, because churches are always built on places of ancient sacred geometry and earth energy, as you are fully aware. So they chose these round towers, and the round towers are not just in Ireland, they're in a great many places around the world, from very, very similar times and very, very similar archaeology, architecture. So there has to be some connection to those, and I'm of the opinion that they are a kind of antenna to that energy, which our priest, our shaman, would connect to the other world to go and get his questions answered from, you know, those other beings that they saw, whatever they were. So, you know, this is ancient technology of a much more quantum and earth-friendly nature than the technology that we put up today.
Like our new antenna, HARP.
Yes, well.
Which we're not supposed to talk about ever.
What can you say about that? I mean, they're polluting the environment big style.
Yeah, I wonder if the HAARP facility is, how it's interacting with the ancient antenna byways that you speak of. It's another subject that we'll have to have another whole show about, I imagine.
Well, one thing's for sure, since HAARP's been in operation, they've been, we're talking about the alpha and theta frequencies, where alpha is where we're really awake and we're pumping and we're in war zone in our mind. And, mm-hmm. and theta is, of course, where we're fast asleep. And the Earth naturally resonates at 7.83, somewhere between the two, so it's kind of calm. It's the seventh day of rest, if you like. And but since HAARP's been pumping their frequencies into the atmosphere, the last I heard that we got an 11 hertz frequency, which means that the Earth itself is now angry. It's wide awake,
yeah.
and it's going to start doing whatever it's going to do. You know, I don't think
it's already started.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it's just HAARP. I think that the sun's got an awful lot of influence in it as well, of course.
Yeah. I found it interesting in your book that you talked about the fact of the Earth being in a perfect trance frequency level.
Well, precisely. I mean, that's the point. It's, of course, in the time of the Egyptians and our other ancestors who built the stone circles and Stonehenge and all these other wonderful things, that it was in that frequency. And, you know,
yeah.
is there any truth to this? Well, even NASA know that there's truth to it, because when they sent astronauts into space, they were reporting that they were getting depressed. And they actually found that if they put a speaker inside the space shuttle or inside the ship that resonated the frequency 7.83, they felt okay, because they were suddenly back in connection to that frequency of the Earth. They were back with their mother, you know? That proves the point you know, if we are raising the frequency of the Earth to a serious pumping war zone, you know, male kind of attitude of butting heads, then what do we expect the effect to be upon the mind of man, which is in connection to this? We're just not aware of it.
Yeah, I mean, in my book, I do talk about HAARP and the fact that they were cranking to full capacity back in 2005, and there is quite a resonance between 2005 to now, and just an extreme acceleration of violence and fear and just intense energy on this planet.
Mm. I'd agree. Of course, you'd have to also think about maybe the obverse of that, that maybe the mind of man collectively can also affect the Earth itself, because quantum physics is never one way, it's two ways.
Of course.
So, you know...
Of course, unquestionably, in the end, I don't for a minute believe that there is any outside influence or external manipulation that can be more powerful than the collective unconscious.
Yes,
and that is why I'm the ultimate optimist, that we are the creators of this destiny and we can alter our reality at any time.
I would agree 110%.
And we have to keep sending out that message so that people don't sink into fear and remember that we are the power and light.
Absolutely. That's the Gnostic message.
And I'm sharing this thought with Philip Gardner. Again, his website is www.gardnersworld.com, and the book is Gateways to the Other World. How do you like my segue? Not bad, huh?
Very good.
I live in Rome. I don't know if you're aware of that.
And you
very
lucky,
energy
lucky
here
thing.
Because that's the Vatican. Oppressive, I like to think of it as the lead dome of consciousness. And you talk about the great obelisk in Rome as a connection device to the other world, and I would love you to talk about that as well.
Well, again, that relates entirely to those round towers, but the obelisks that our Egyptian friends built are very much like antennas. You know, you call upon work of scientists who have done work in antenna research and people, of course, like Tesla, who showed that you can place a pole upon the Earth with a pyramid shape on top and collect energy and transfer that energy from one pole to another. the question, of course, today is what is that energy? And that energy is information, too. It's not just energy. There is always information in there. Something that crystal school people are picking up on an awful lot at the moment. So those obelisks, they're very much mirror. With the words, with the hieroglyphs that are on there, they very much mirror that connection, that gateway. Even, you know, some of them, of course, talk about famous battles and various other things. But there are, on a lot of, that I've looked at, there are very hidden contexts to the gateways, to connecting to the great one in the sky. So, yes, I mean, Rome's a fantastic place. I am completely jealous.
Yeah?
A fantastic place to live. I love Rome.
Okay, well, why don't you, next time you come over here, you're going to have to call me and show me around and help me discover some of these hidden messages, because I need a teacher to help me learn how to embrace this.
I think there's very little I can teach you.
Not at all. I'm just a humble student, and sometimes I get a little bit put off by the weightiness of the vibration of the religiously suppressed wisdom here. For example, I look at the great obelisks in Rome, and then I see the cross on the top, and it irritates me. And it's not because the symbol of the cross is not something I worship as well. It's just that it just seems that at every point there's this religious Vatican suffocation in this environment. So you have to kind of enlighten me.
All I can say to that is, we are now in the 21st century, and there are some great movements in uncovering what the truth is about the religion that we call Catholicism, or even Islam, or any of the others, that they all do point back to the mind of man and to his connection to his self. And
in their pure state.
In their pure state, the real self that most people... I'm afraid in the world I haven't got a clue it even exists. You know, there is a great movement tonight. Even last night on the BBC, there was a British vicar pointing out the truth that were in the Lost Gospels. So, you know, I think even they're having to come to some understanding that the truth is out, and they better get moving.
I know, that's why it's so great to be alive now, despite the illusions or the disillusionment of some of the things that are occurring on our planet. We are definitely observing and taking part in revelation in every sense, and it's very, very exciting. It requires a lot of responsibility and grounding as well, but it sure is exciting to know that we chose to come in for this. We're empowered to be here to work with this and, you know, bring it on already.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, to put it in context for people, only 100 years ago, the great Eliphas Levi, a great writer on the occult and mysticism, and even was a Jesuit priest at a certain time in his life, and they got kicked out, he wrote a lot of truth about the Gnostic truths and about the trance state and about, you know, the serpent energy and all of that. And he was placed in prison for it several times, not just once. So only 100 years ago. So this is probably one of the very first ages of man where we can actually have discussions such as this out in the open.
Yeah, more or less. There are some out in the open places that they might drag us away. But nonetheless, we are on the radio. I don't know. I'm feeling giddy just talking about this. All right, let's get on to, you've mentioned crystals, and this is another area where we're in sync, because I've worked with crystals for 30 years, and I think that all of us on some level are connected and discovering crystal energies and their ability to, their piezoelectric qualities, their ability to store and magnify energy. And we know that there's never been more interest than now. Well, I take that back. There may have been in Atlantis interest in crystal skulls. I personally am very involved with crystal skulls, having been gifted with a crystal Mayan skull in Palenque. And so you talk about crystal skulls, and I'd like to brainstorm and talk to you about what you feel is driving this interest in skulls at this time on the planet.
Well, quite apart from the fact that there is an Indiana Jones movie coming out which involves Christmas.
Yeah, no, that doesn't count.
I'm afraid that does always have a bit of an influence. But
yeah.
Obviously, I think that the drive in the interest came way before Indiana Jones anyway, and I think that Indiana Jones have picked up on that fact. The people behind the film, they've picked up on it. So I think that the drive is coming because of this collective consciousness that we're all now having, that you've just been very rightly discussing, that we all need to have this positive attitude, that we are, we can make a difference, and that makes us look back and sideways in all different ways at what other cultures have done and utilised. And one of those, of course, is crystals, not just crystal skulls, but crystals as a whole. And I know this can sound very strange to a lot of people, but I have a strange perception of existence. I see existence in mathematical form, in ratio. So when I move my hand across in front of me, I see my hand move space fabric, the fabric of space, in a mathematical formation. Now that's making an information passage. It's giving information to the air and to the particles in front of my hand as I'm moving it, and also to that air behind it in order to make it move. It's all a very mathematical equation. And there are six prime equations which run the entire universe. And they can be seen within crystals and within the crystal skull. And within us, and within the atom, and within the particle, and within the universe, it runs everything. So we are connected to everything via this incredible fabric of ratio. Crystals, to me, because of their piezoelectric attitude that they have, where you can squeeze them and get energy out, or you can put energy in and alter their form, and they maintain and memorize that information energy, there is something about them which is fascinating, and it is because of the mathematical structure of them that they are able to do that. And these are things that have taken millennia to make sometimes. And so they hold an awful lot of quantum particle information from this universe. The concept with the shamans, of course, is that they could place their palm on top of the crystal skull and import information into it. Now, of course, the palm, anybody who knows about Earth, human energy, who knows that the palm of your hand is one of those places where the most of the energy comes out. So it's an incredible concept that the energy information coming from our very selves is placed upon that crystal skull. And the scientists tell us that the crystal skulls, the crystal, hold on to that information until you can get it out again. And, of course, the shaman then say, the following shaman comes along, places his hand on the crystal skull and takes the information out from the previous shaman. Not done any tests on it. I've no idea if that's true, but the science does seem to back some of that up, what that information is. Whether this is just the crystal is a portal into the quantum matrix of the universe is yet to be proven,
well,
I'm sure, but it's a fascinating subject.
As soon as I meet you, Philip, which I hope will be soon, I'm going to show you a little beautiful quartz sphere that I have, that I have testimony was absolutely clear. I like very clear quartz when I first got it. And after I did some meditating with it, it formed, it etched within the crystal a perfect reproduction of a temple in Tibet that I was visiting and meditating in.
Absolutely.
And it is so clear that, in fact, I'm going to send you a photograph of it because you won't believe this is possibly inside a crystal. It's perfectly etched. And I have testimony of people that have seen it before and after and said, even skeptics. My own mate said, this is not possible. But it's quite exciting when you see manifest within a crystal formation actual manifestation of thought and creation.
Yes. Visual
mind transference.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to say to somebody, oh, yes, I'm looking at the crystal and I'm receiving this information, and it's another to see it sculpted within the crystal.
That's fantastic.
I'll send you a picture of it, and then I'll meet you, and I'll work with you with the sphere.
Absolutely.
This is what you call inviting myself to meeting you.
Any time. It's an incredible concept. I'd love to see that.
Okay, that will happen. So, what do you think about the myth and the story that the 12 crystal skulls of Atlantis will be reunited in 2012?
Anybody who knows me that I'm not a skeptic, but I'm somebody who says I've got to find information, I've got to find evidence. You know, I'm ruthless with myself in that respect.
But you have a beautiful balance between that skepticism and a beautiful openness to the mystic, which is why I was particularly interested in having you on.
Thank you. It's a very, very difficult balance to maintain, I can tell you. You know, when you get the likes of, just to use an example, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Houdini. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle went off into the world of spiritualism and started seeing fairies and pictures of cut-out fairies and believed them, that they were real fairies. Right? And there are many people who believe in fairies who think that he was right. But even though the evidence, all the evidence that we've got, shows that they were cardboard cut-outs, Houdini, on the other hand, totally and utterly refused to accept it or any of the spiritualism, claimed to be open-minded, and yet never really was, and they fell out at the end. They're almost like the two sides of the divided mind of man, playing out this role for us all. So I neither wish to be Conan Doyle, who runs around believing in cardboard cutouts, but neither do I wish to be Houdini, who will go to his grave having never found the truth.
So that doesn't give me much of an answer, but I'm going to have to glean what you mean from it.
As far as Atlantis is concerned, I do not have sufficient evidence for me to place my hand on my heart on either side. Atlantis, to many of us who are involved in Gnostic works and alchemy, etc., are of the opinion that Atlantis may in fact be a metaphor for very ancient psychology. There are other friends that I have, Crichton Miller being one of them, who thinks that, and very, very impressively, pinpoints exactly where Atlantis was. And it's not been released, and he hasn't released it to anybody, no matter how much I try to convince him.
Let him talk to me. I'll try to convince him too. All right, but meanwhile, regardless of Atlantis or no, we do, I'm sure you're aware, because I do read that you speak quite a lot about the shamans of the Mayas, et cetera, and you know that they're gathering more and more frequently now with skulls, yeah?
Yes.
There's a big a meeting in Tikal at the Equinox that I had been invited to, in fact, where 150 shamans are meeting, each bringing a skull. So regardless of whether or not this is we buy the Atlantis myth,
yeah.
This is a very interesting aspect that all of these shamans from so many countries keep meeting and bringing these skulls together. And I was just wondering if you have any experience about that or any vision or opinions about what they could be up to. You talked about transference of information from skull to skull. Imagine 150 shamans, each with his own skull, meeting in the great pyramids of South America.
What I would love to do, if I had the funding to do so, is to set up an awful lot of scientific equipment while I were there to analyze it in a modern form. And that's not being negative in any way. You know, even the Rosicrucians, the great occultists of their time, stated that, you know, understanding nature through science gives us a better understanding of ourselves, and that's my kind of take on this. I would love to see it from my side of the fence, which is an analytical, you know, hard-nosed kind of way, but we're still with an open
mind. Yeah, you're not going to get away with being completely analytical. I'm not going to buy that you're completely over there, all the way on the side of the left side of the fence. But yes, I think that more and more people who are, for lack of a better term, New Age people, are not intimidated by the science, because the science keeps proving the stuff out.
Absolutely. That's
bring it on. Bring on the science.
You made it perfectly. Thank you.
Well, I suggest that if you can find a way to somehow enter these environments and figure out what electromagnetic processes are taking place with shamans of countries like Peru and all of the shamanic Mayan countries meeting over and over again. What are they up to? They're talking about the future of the planet, whatever, but they're bringing the skulls with them. I can only believe that they're doing some very powerful energy work for the planet. It's very exciting. And
yes.
So we've got to figure out a way to get you there so that you can figure out what's really happening in technical terms.
Well, I think that if we can actually figure out some of these techniques and understand them better, that we might actually help mankind in a great many ways.
I agree.
Because the mainstream of the world, you know, we're not really talking to the mainstream right now, are we? But the mainstream of the world will only see it in this way. And I see myself sometimes as an interpreter, you know, to the mainstream.
The mainstream will only see it. The mainstream that you're talking about won't even see it in your way. The mainstream just isn't even thinking about it.
Well, you know, I will say, with a marketing background, that is why any minute now I have a book coming out called The Bond Code.
That is a great segue, too. What is The Bond Code going to be about?
Yeah, all about James Bond. Now, you imagine that is going to get through to mainstream. But all the messages that are in there are ancient.
That sounds fantastic.
So it's finding a method to get through.
When is that going to come out?
It'll be in about a week, I believe.
God, Philip, you're such a prolific author.
Oh, that's my last one for a good while.
Yeah, I don't believe you for a minute. All right, we've been talking to, believe it or not, our time is just about up already. Is that scary? Next time we get together, we'll have to talk about how time doesn't really exist, and it's also an illusion. We've been talking to Philip Gardner. He's a master author, and his book, again, Gateways to the Other World, which I admit I haven't completely read. I have to go through it when I have a moment and start at the beginning and go to the end, which I don't usually do. I usually just kind of douse for what I need and go each direction from there. Thanks a million for being on my show, Philip. I really am eager to meet you, and I remember last year you did a big conference in England, didn't you?
Yeah, the Forbidden Knowledge Conference. Yes.
I wanted to come to that. Have you got anything coming up soon?
Do you know, I have been pulling back from appearing at things. I've turned so much stuff down just lately. It's incredible. I'm really trying to help other people into not the limelight, but to get their voices heard. So I'm taking a little back seat so that I can help push other people forward.
Wonderful. Well, meanwhile, we'll wait for your book and see what you do with the mainstream in your new book, The Bond Code.
Thank you very much, folks.
It's Philip Gardner again. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for being with me, Philip. I've really enjoyed having you on. And everyone, please remember, it's www.syrianrevelations.net for my books. I'm working on a new book now, which should be out next spring, Where Pharaohs Dwell, Walking in the Footsteps of Om Seti. I know you're going to love this one. And that's what's got me in Egypt every other week. So bear with me while I try to get that out for you. And remember that we've got the trip to Peru and a trip in the crop circles and sacred sites of England. Hey, Philip, maybe we'll meet you in the crop circles.
That sounds like a good idea.
All righty. Thanks again. Good night, everyone. I'll see you next Sunday. I keep saying I'll see you. I won't see you. I'll speak to you next Sunday night, and that's afternoon in California time. Thanks to all. Don't forget to look up Philip on his site. There's a lot of exciting information there, and we will catch you next week, Beyond the Matrix. Good night.